Thank you, Alistair, and thank you for your warm welcome. It's always one of those days, gosh, it's what, 3 or 4 years since I last stood here, but it's always one of those days when walking up the hill rather than down the hill, I just quietly give thanks that actually this is something which, I don't know, 50 years ago, you couldn't quite imagine happening. And yet, isn't it great that we can come together and recognise our two churches together? Can I do anything to help sound-wise, or by all means just turn me off and I'll be fine with the lecture? Great. So has anyone guessed what my theme for today is? You might have worked it out. In fact, could we go back to the very start of the reading? Because as I said, I really am going to preach on one verse and one verse only. How often does a preacher say that and actually mean it? But I think I'll stick good to that promise. Salt in biblical times was used excessively in the Middle East. The writer Sirach, not someone who you'd often hear about in this church, as he's part of that small group of books from the Apocrypha, but Sirach listed salt as one of the necessities of life. The Dead Sea was full of it, and it was mined from its shores and surrounding coasts. And surprisingly, for a land which was rich in salt, it's also imported salt as well. The reason being, well, actually, the Dead Sea salt wasn't great salt. And so they brought other salt in from elsewhere. And its uses, even in those first century times, was as a preservative. Those days of pre-refrigeration is a very important preservative. It was valued medically and rubbed on newborn babies. What on earth is that about? It was associated with purification and fertilization. Ever get the salt out for your fields, Marshall? And it was even a fire catalyst. Apparently, what they would do, that they would have a plate of salt under the fire and then build a fire on top of it, and that would act as a catalyst for the fire. Anyone ever tried that? Go home and see. But most of all, most importantly of all, it was to flavour food, human and animal. Your pigs in those days came pre-salted. And don't you just love this? I've now lost my text, but that's my notes, but I can do without those. So there is a real sense of the salt being such an important part of life, particularly because in the Middle East, anyone been there? Anyone been to Israel? Yeah, a few, excellent. On a warm day, what do you end up doing more so than you do here? Yeah, you sweat. And so you actually need to replenish those salt levels inside you. It's a really important constituent of life. And it's no wonder that today's parable, for me, I'm very happy to regard this verse as a parable in nature, albeit a very small parable. Jesus is using a parable. Meaning a parable? Oh, that sounds like a theologian. It's one version, certainly. But if you go to the Greek, para means alongside. Yeah, alongside. So you talk about paramedics. Well, para means alongside. And bull comes from ballo. Well done, sir. You are absolutely right. It's like ball, and actually it meant, what do you do with a ball? Throw. Excellent. You've been doing Greek on the side, haven't you? But you're absolutely right. The word comes from the verb ballo, which means to throw. And that's why we get the word ball. Superb rationalization. And so salt and light is a parable. It's a throwing out there of what we are meant to be. Why is it that we are meant to be salt? Well, alongside the uses, let's have alongside another way. What is salt? Who are the chemists among us? Ah! And so the chemical symbols for salt are? NaCl. And you've got another pharmacist. And that means? Sodium chloride. And sodium chloride, unless I'm about to be contradicted, is one of the most stable compounds at all. Salt, if it is just sodium and chloride, no other additives, is incredibly stable. You are not going to find that sodium chloride, if that's all it is, diminishes. If you go back home and say, I told you he was wrong, that Anglican doesn't know what he's talking about, this table salt has got a shelf life. The reason it has a shelf life is because of the added iodine or other things which come into the salt. If it's just sodium chloride, it's incredibly pure. But the background to this passage is that actually in the first century, part of the problem was that the sodium chloride of the salt had quite a lot of impurities. So let's now turn to the passage and see what we think might be going on. I'll just read that first verse. Told you I was just preaching on one verse. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. So is there a way, dear chemists, of making salt salty again? Does that rationale stand up chemically?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Okay, so we're happy with that rationale. So what is Jesus saying here? You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? If salt loses its saltiness, one thing which he could be saying is, and we are the salt, then he could just be saying, right, forget it, you are no longer disciples, get out of here. There would have been a time in the life of this chapel that hell and fire and damnation would have been preached upon you. And that might have been part of it. But I suspect not today. For me, this is a reminder that actually at the true character of being a disciple, then we need to be salt. And what does that mean? It means actually making a difference and impact in our world today. Now, the congregation of Rington URC, even if you join with your friends from All Saints, will not be solving some of the big problems facing our world today. I am realistic. But I am also convinced that each in our own way can make a difference to those around us. We have got something to offer. Wherever we are, whatever we do, we have something to offer. And that is to make a Christ-like difference in the place where God has called us to. Be that in the village, in our workplace, at home, with our family and friends. That's our mission area. That is where God has called us to in this time. Where God has called us to might change. But what God has called us to do hasn't. We are called to be salt in that place in our world today. And yes, I know that the church is facing huge issues. Now, isn't it great that you've been given, what was it, scopeability to actually call a new minister. That's a really exciting time for the church. The conversations with Nailsy, that's an exciting step for you as a church. But actually, for me, when I saw all of that brimming along, yes, that's for our prayers, but also, that, in a sense, that's for another day. For me, I felt quite comfortable by actually saying, just don't forget, in the midst of all of that, and church can be a hungry monster, can't it? Let's just remember what actually we are called to do. We are called to be disciples of Christ, and we are called to be salt in our world today. You also know that Anglicans can only preach for about 10 minutes. My time is almost up, which is why I thought I'd enlist some URC help. So Lizzie, can you come and join me for a few moments? If you want to take one of the... if you want to come join me, yeah, if you want to share this microphone with me.
Because everyone knows I never talk for long. So, well, we're fine.
And for me, my first question is, what came first, nursing or God?
Well, David asked earlier, just before the chapel started, I knew I was doing this, and he said, I thought I'd just ask you now what came first, God or nursing, and then we decided that I should answer this here rather than with him at the back of the church, because that was quite a difficult one to answer, really. I'm not one of those people who always wanted to be a nurse, or maybe I did, really, but the answer is really God, definitely. I think God was quietly working away, hoping that I might listen to him. But I had my own ideas and was influenced by other things that kept coming my way. So Dad being a doctor, whenever you say, if you're a child of a doctor, if you say you want to be a nurse, the standard response people will often give you is, why don't you want to be a doctor? And so then you have to explain and say, well, I think I want to be a nurse, actually. I think they're quite different. My mum was a nurse. And then other things, I thought maybe I just wanted to go and do biology or something like that. And it was only when I had the quiet of, well, it was when I sort of stopped listening to all the other, I didn't consciously listen to God, but I got to university to do my biochemistry degree, which is a good job, I didn't do that. And I remember putting my bags down in the halls of residence, and suddenly there was a quiet, and it literally was as if God said, right, now can we have a conversation? What about this nursing idea? And I thought, I want to be a nurse. And 10 days later, I left university, took a year out, and then went into a degree in nursing.
Wow, isn't
that fascinating? So God was there all along. Looking back, yeah. It was easy to see, but at the time, I was 18, I had my own ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, remind us what you do nursing-wise now, and can you just say a little bit about where you see God in your work today?
So I currently work at the Tinsfield Medical Group, which is like a group of really lovely we're a group of practices in Nailsy and Backwell and Long Ashton. And I'm a research nurse, so I help make sure that our patients have access to studies that are going on within primary care that may be of benefit to them and maybe of benefit to the wider sort of population generally in the future. So I talk to patients about recruiting them into trials. And what was the second part of the question?
And where's God in your work?
And where's God in my work? Oh, definitely everywhere, really. And I think, so when David said, would I help with talking about God at work and this passage, which I love, and Jo's here, and she's a GP, she might get this as well a bit, and other people who have one-to-ones. It's very easy to get into the swing of just being in the run-of-the-mill of what you're doing with work and forgetting that you've got a person in front of you. But every time, if I get into that groove, if I just think, I've got an actual person in front of me here, and I've got a chance to make this one encounter, one not profound, nothing kind of, you know, mind-blowing, but just to let God into that space. So it's a very quiet, but I do quite often, particularly when I'm seeing women, I often see women who are of a certain age and have got a certain load of things going on, and it really feels like they don't get the space to ever, they never have anyone looking them in the eyes and saying, are you okay? Like, what you're talking to me about sounds pretty rubbish. Like, would you like some help? Is there anything we could do that would be helpful? And I really feel that it's not really me. I'm a conduit to make sure they get the help that they need. And I do feel that that's God working. But that isn't something that I can only do because I'm a nurse, I don't think. I think that's something that we all, and I see that here, there are people in the community here who let God in every time they have a conversation with someone, and I think that's really special.
Because I wanted to talk about that, because so often both, you know, nursing is one of those occupations which is long been recognised as a vocation, a calling from God, and you clearly, very clearly talk in those terms. I'd want to talk about what I do and my calling to be a minister as being exactly that. That was a really strong calling. I can take you to the place where I received that calling. I can tell you the time, not quite the date, but it was the first Friday in May 1994. You know, I can tell you when and where that calling suddenly all came together. All those prayers and jumbled thoughts came together, and that was it. But actually, I wonder whether we think about vocation in that sense, in your and my role, almost then dismisses what other people do. You know, Marcus can't be with us today, but gosh, I wonder whether Marcus would call about being a police officer as a calling. But actually, shouldn't we talk about all that we do as a calling? I remember there's a wonderful lady in my previous parish, and her job, she's called Pam, and I still give thanks for her today, and she was a printer. And that's what she did. She worked as a printer in a school, she set up her own business, and she printed stuff. But boy, did she print things for God. That was part of her work. That's simply what she did. For those of you who are grandparents, I mean, Janet's just been away this week. How dare you, my love, looking after the two eldest grandchildren. Gosh, if that isn't a calling from God, I don't know what is. It really is, isn't it? Those of us who have that privilege of being able to look after children in that sense. So I wanted to kind of ask about that broader ministry which you have, and the time you spend around the village. Where do you make the connections between that and God?
So again, David was saying, so we're going to talk a bit about how you bring God, like if you've got God in your work. I was like, okay, yes, tick, quite easy. God with your friends and around the village. I thought, yes, I like to help and get involved, tick. And then you said, and what about God in your family? And I thought, now that's where I need some prayer, because that is where I struggle. But more so, because I think that can become very run-of-the-mill, and I lose, you know, it's where I lose my temper, and my children will tell me that I shout, and, you know.
Where's your son gone?
He's gone. Yeah. I can feel, you know, where I'd like to help out, but it's harder within the family to always feel and see God. I mean, of course, I see God as giving me the huge blessings of my family, but I think in terms of my role with helping and bringing God into my everyday conversations and nagging and things like that, that's where I've got some work to do.
Interesting. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I guess we all share that. And if we look at the Bible, we can see so many examples of precisely that. My line is, I went from single man to granddad in 15 months. And when we heard of the arrival of Phoebe, who's now tall, splendid-looking 16-year-old. Actually, for that 8 months we knew before her, before she actually arrived, God actually honoured my jumbled concerns. I can't call them prayers, but he dignified them as prayer. I was really worried about that situation. I got it so wrong. I thought that Phoebe's mum would not be able to cope with being a mum. Whoa, 16 years later, she's proved me completely wrong at every stage. And I'm so proud of her. But actually, that time was hugely worrying. I didn't think she could cope as a teenage mum. I really didn't. And somehow God dignified what was on my heart as prayer. And for me, as a result, gave me this wonderful relationship with his granddaughter. So family life is tough, isn't it? It's really tough. And I don't know whether there are any blended families here, but certainly as a blended family for us. Family life was tough going when I arrived with the girls aged 12, 14 and 17. That was a baptism of fire. When suddenly they had to become part of being part of a rectory. The vicar's children. But also, I was just thinking as I was coming out today, I remember the words of Gordon Brown as he left Downing Street. The son of a Presbyterian manse, may I remind you. And he just said, basically, thank you, I just finished doing the second most important job of my life. I'm going off to do the most important job of my life. And that's being a dad to my two sons. Wasn't that great? Wasn't that someone getting the values? Absolutely right. Do you want to say anything more about God in your day to day?
No,
you're done.
I do.
You're baked.
Yeah, no,
okay,
I think that
lovely.
Is.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. Lizzie, thank you so much. Time for me to finish up. All too late, we in the Anglican Church are realizing that actually what is key is not about keeping your big, large 13th century building alive or keeping the worship right. It's actually about, it's gone, this stuff. Being salt in our world today. And doesn't our world need it? And don't we actually have opportunities? Opportunities in the way that we haven't had here in Rington for years. We have refugees from Ukraine. We have asylum seekers from Iran, Russia, Africa, Arabia. Big issues are coming to our doorstep today. And we have the continuing issue about being salt in the place where God has called us. And this is not something to do with age. However young we are, however old we are, sorry, wise, however wise we are, God encourages us, requires of us that we are to be the salt of the earth. Let's not let him down. Let's ensure that we maintain that discipleship and walk with him today as a disciple of Christ. Amen.
So we shall stand and sing As the Deer.